All right, I'm cheating a little bit here by starting off on November 12. We are going to go right back shortly to November 9. But let's start here for a moment. You are familiar with the parable of the talents. Tell me what you know about the parable of the talents. Hopefully, if we manage our time, we'll come back to the parable of the talents for a little look at it in context before the class is out. So give me the brief, your thoughts on your memory of the parable of the talents.
About stewardship.
There were three men, they each had a certain amount of wealth given to them, and two of them ended up gaining more. The other one basically buried it and didn't have it, he didn't gain any more.
Okay, so what's the message of the parable of the talents?
Use your gifts well.
Don't be satisfied with what you have, do more.
Okay. We are to be in his, I like the word you use, that's the word we're going to use later in the class. Frequently the scripture uses the word servant, sometimes it uses the word steward. Here, the focus here is, if you went through and you underlined, each of these guys is entrusted, right? He called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. So what does that make them? A servant to whom things are entrusted is a steward. We need to think of ourselves that way. We are not just servants of the Lord, but those things that are in our hands are entrusted to us. And so that is the message of this, and it falls in context with the whole discussion that's going on. And each one of these that does well, the discussion is made in the context of entrustment. Now let's flip back over here to page 1439. And we've got the parable of the 10 minus. M-I-N-A-S, not M-I-N-U-S. So there's still plussing going on, not minusing, right? So is this any different? Is this the same parable, different words? Minus versus talents? I mean, some of the message is similar, right? What's the broad outline of what happens in the parable of the minus?
What you earn.
Okay, so there is some difference there in earning that's going on. In very broad stroke, it's very similar, right? You've got a few servants. There is value put in their hands. The master goes away. He comes back, and you've got the one who did really well, the one who did sort of well, and the one who didn't produce at all, right? So in very broad brush, they're very much the same. Do you think of the parable of the minus as just being another version of the parable of the talents? Have you ever thought about it separately and individually? So, you good. So let's talk about where this is in the discussion. Right before this parable, so you'll see here, we're in Luke chapter 19, verses 11 through 27. If you go to the prior page and you take it out of our chronological order, you would skip over blind Bartimaeus healed. Luke 19, 1 through 10 is Zacchaeus, right? And so we know the story of Zacchaeus from when we were children. How does the story of Zacchaeus end? It's not a trick. It's actually on the page. How does it end? All right. When?
When he repents and...
Today salvation has come to this house because this man too is the son of Abraham, right? So in Luke, we go from Zacchaeus and the statement that today salvation has come to you, and then we come right over to the parable of the minus. Now, why does he tell this parable now? Y'all don't look at me like these are... I mean, sometimes I ask the what's in Nathan's head questions, but a lot of times I ask right off the page.
Yeah, because... He said, today salvation's come to this house, and then it goes on to say they thought the kingdom was just going to appear once.
Why does he tell the story? Because they thought the kingdom was going to appear at once. What does that mean?
Magically appear, and there was going to be a
beautiful, glorious kingdom in front of them, and gold and silver, and God was going to rule over.
Their perception, they've heard, today is salvation come to this house. And the people who were understanding that he is the Messiah, the Son, the King that was to come, the Anointed, what are they in the mindset of now? They're in the mindset of, man, this is happening, right? And when is it happening?
Right now.
And how is it going to happen? At once. So, I mean, in the sense of at once, not just immediately, but quickly, right? And so, this, if you understand that Jesus is telling them this parable because they have the mindset of quick and easy fulfillment of the kingdom. And he tells them the parable because of that. Now let's pay attention to what the parable is. What's the context of this parable that is different from the parable of the talents? This is a great parable. They're all great. But this is so packed. Tell me how this thing starts. Oh, do we sense something going on there?
Well, it's because they were near Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And so a man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then return. What's going to happen?
Jesus.
A man, the Son of Man, of noble birth, right? Goes to a distant country. And is somebody going to appoint him? Mm-hmm. All right, so they're thinking kingdom, and now he starts talking to him about kingdom. And it's the coming king is going to go away for a while to be anointed, then he's going to come back. And what's going to happen when he goes away in the parable?
They're going to hate him.
Okay. So he calls 10 of his servants and gave them 10 minas, put this money to work until I come back. Is there a message for these people hearing this right now? All right, you think this is coming quickly and easily. Here's what happens when kings get made in the way I'm telling things. They go away for a little while. What happens when they go away to be anointed king? What happens?
There's work to be done.
You do your work. He's going to entrust you with some stuff. You do your work. So that's number one. People who are his servants are going to work. And then, I think you said it, the next paragraph, but... All right, so there's some people he's going to give money to work, and there's some people who are going to say, boy, I don't want you to be my king, right? Do we see the parallels? I mean, we don't talk about the parable of the minas that much, but this is about Jesus. This is about his people. This is about those who are rejecting him because they don't like who he is, right? Now we get to the part that is fairly similar to the parable of the talents. He's made king and he returns home. And what does he do when he returns home? There's a reckoning. And so we have the one who took the mina and earned 10 more. And the message to him is, you have been trustworthy in a very small matter. Take charge of 10 cities. Is the reward commensurate with the task?
Far greater.
I mean, was there any reason for these servants to comprehend how great of a reward they were going to get? Who gets the benefit of the reward? I mean, it's... Who gets the minus at the end of the day in this parable?
The servants are worst.
What's that?
The servants.
It's the servants. It's the ones that work. Do you see that? Because I mean, we know that because when you get to that last servant, the master says, take his mina away from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas. He did his work for the master. And whose 10 minas are they when he's done doing the work for the master? They're the servants. And people can't even believe it because you get, well, he's got 10. You already blessed him with 10. It was your money to begin with. What a powerful parable that's going on here, right? I mean, the to be king goes away, you do the work, you get rewarded beyond your comprehension, and who bears the benefit of the work that you've done for the master? You do. And what happens to those who are who hated him?
They're executed.
Yeah. I mean, is Jesus warm and fuzzy even in his parables? Right? I mean, he's telling some strong message here. All right, how about this?
Before you go on,
yeah.
It's interesting. You go back and you think about what we talked about on Sunday, about our responsibility as a servant. We're only doing what we were commanded to do, what was expected of us. So you think of this, there was no expectation for them to receive the 10 cities or the 10 minas or however. Their expectation was...
do the work.
Do it.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Regardless of our reward, because you look at this as the parallel between us as the servants and the city as in heaven, it's our responsibility to just do what we're supposed to. Regardless of what's coming, do what you're supposed to do.
They're not doing it for the reward. They're doing it because the master said, take care of this for me. And the reward comes because they are faithful stewards, not because they've actually earned it. Did they earn 10 cities? In a way, you could say they put their talents to earning 10 minas and maybe deserved a portion of that. He gives it all to them. And he gives them beyond that. He gives them 10 full cities.
And
all right, so we've seen...
Buried it, did so because they were fearful.
And I have that highlighted back over on the talents. But that's the same message between the two, right? Why does he hide it? Because I knew you were a hard taskmaster, and you reap where you don't sow, and I was fearful in both of these. Right? And are we supposed to be fearful of the Lord? Yes! I keep saying that, right? I mean, that was the message that Peter understood in Acts chapter 10 when... When the word went to the Gentiles, that in every nation those who fear him are acceptable. Yes, you're to fear him, but what are you to do with that fear? You use it to action and to following and to good stewardship, not for cowering. That's not the type of fear it is, right? And so when we read over in 1 John that perfect love casts out fear, and yet we see all through Scripture you're supposed to have fear, what's going on?
A different fear.
Well, how about this? Do we have perfect love? Even of the Father?
No.
If you have perfect love, do you have anything to fear? But you don't have perfect love. I don't have perfect love of the Father, right? So because I don't have that perfection, I'm striving towards it, but I don't have it, I have to understand that because of my incapacity, there is a need to fear falling short and trampling underfoot the blood of Christ, right? And it's because of who we are. All right, how about this one? We've seen this a number of times. The master, now king, replies, I tell you that to everyone who has, more will be given, but as for the one who has nothing, even what they have will be taken away. Y'all real comfortable with that? You know what he's saying there?
Well, the context is one who has nothing back to give back.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this in a number of contexts, right? He keeps saying this. What does it mean in your English?
Those who don't do with their gifts as they should are just like the rest of them who hated him. I mean, they're then given the same amount as everybody else who rejected him.
No work, no reward.
Yeah, I mean, look, what do these people have that they ended up getting more of? They all started the same, right? They all started with one mina, right? And so it's not the guy with one mina gets less than the guy with 10 minas. Because they all started with the same. What do they have in different amount?
They worked for
dividends.
They had a different relationship with him. They had a different drive. They had a different faith. They had a different, I mean, right? They all stood in the same capacity with the resources made available to them. And then what happens to their position before the king when they weren't really in the right position with him doing his stewardship? What happens? They get thrown out of the position, right? All right. So what's the message of this? There are multiple messages here. What's the message of the 10 minds?
Back on what you were just saying, mm-hmm. They had different capacities. And just the fact one had 10, one had 5.
I mean, God. I don't know that they had different capacities. They each start with one mina in this one.
Well,
he gave them each a mina.
But they're rewarded in the same way, not to the same extent. So my point is they have different capacities. What I'm saying is, I have some abilities totally different from everybody else, and we shouldn't compare ourselves one with another. We just deal with whatever capacity is and do that to the Lord and let the Lord reward it. And the Lord may reward, the Lord may say people with totally different capacities fulfill them 100%, despite the fact their apparent progress or rewards or objectivity.
In the comparison of those who did work,
right.
Take those as a group and set aside the guy who doesn't work.
That's not the main point of the parable.
And your point's well taken on that. All right, so what are the messages of this parable then?
To take his stewardship seriously.
Okay. Yes, the kingdom's coming. Is there any doubt about it in the parable? Yes, the kingdom's coming. When's it going to come? Is it coming all at once and easy? There's going to be work for you to do, right? I expect you, so there's a timing, there's message, and there's work to be done during that time, and there is a message of rejection and what happens to those who work versus reject, right? So that's part of it, but understand the timing, and then we go over here into, what am I highlighting still? Then we go over into the triumphant entry, which is about to happen. Why is it important that he tells this parable right before the triumphant entry? I mean, what's going on in the triumphant entry? I don't mean physically.
Fulfillment of prophecy.
Okay, so there's fulfillment of prophecy, and what's the emotion?
That will make him great joy.
Everybody's excited about this. Why? Because they think the kingdom of heaven is coming all at once, right? Because today salvation has come to your house.
And to be fair, John the Baptist's message and Jesus and his disciples' message was the kingdom of heaven is at hand. They just had a misunderstanding of the nature of the kingdom.
Yes.
But in terms of its proximity, they were right about that.
Well, and let's make sure that we understand this. Again, I've been careful to press that the word kingdom means dominion of the king, right? And so, when is the kingdom going to come? Because actually, I'm about to go all the way to yesterday's reading if we do that, right? When is the kingdom going to come? Well, it depends on what sense that you're talking about it, right? I mean, God's reign. Satan is going to be cast out, the Lord will say, when? Now is the time that he's going to be cast out. When? We're talking about his crucifixion. The rule of the Lord is going to be realized then, right? When the kingdom comes with power, because he has overcome at that point in human history way of reckoning time. But have all enemies been put into subjection? No, there's one last enemy to be put in subjection, and that's death, right? And so we know that the progress of the kingdom is going to continue even after that. So there's a sense in which he comes, but even when he comes, there's still work that has to be done. All right, so these folks, we have this parable about there is work to be done when the king's away and as the kingdom is coming back. We have people who are going into exuberance because of the at this triumphant entry. And what's about to happen to them? Where's this emotion going to go?
The wrong way.
We're going to be on a roller coaster here, right? And so throughout your recent reading, I don't know if it's impressed you, but there have been many times when Jesus has said expressly, I'm telling you this so that you'll remember later, right? the voice that came from heaven was not for my sake, it was for yours, so that you would remember you heard a voice from heaven. And he keeps saying that over and over. What's he doing? He's preparing them to go from the top of the roller coaster, clackety, 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 clack, right, into the ups and downs. And so we are at the top there as everybody's excited. Have you ever read through the Gospels and thought to yourself, no, wait a minute. We had a lot of people, I mean, there were palm fronds and hosannas and riding on a colt. Why now is it all the crowds are crucifying? Has the stunning turn of events ever struck you? Well, and what's the answer to that? What's going on?
The Pharisees really stirring it up from my.
And I mean, I think it's what you said. I mean, that I think a lot of them just get caught up in the emotion, you know, are pulled into, you know, with, you know, I don't know if you want to call it peer pressure, but when you've got an event going on, there's a lot of emotion involved. It makes it a whole lot easier for people to sway that way.
I think you are dead on to a part of it. That's one of my points on that, right? So what's going on? We need to understand it as we are reading about these final days. There are people who are exuberant and emotional because they understand to some degree. Go back and read the story of Lazarus, right? Jesus gets to Bethany, and the sisters keep coming to him and saying, if you had just been here, he wouldn't have died. And he has this discussion with, is it Mary? He has this discussion with Mary, and he says, do you believe? And she says, yes, I believe. And he explains to her, I am the life, right? And, huh?
I am the resurrection.
I am the life. I am the resurrection. Yes. And what he's saying there, if you go back and you reread that story, is you believe this point. You need to get deeper, right? And so we have this group of people who believe to a certain point. We've seen that developing, right? And then we get over here onto page 1456, and it becomes express. Even after Jesus had performed so many signs in their presence, what? They still would not believe. There's this population of people who just aren't going to believe, no matter what the evidence and the testimony of God by miracles, Hebrews chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, is in their faces. And yet on the very same page, we're not hopping books here, right? That's in verse 37 of John chapter 12. In verse 42 of John chapter 12, what's it say? Yet at the same time, many even among the leaders believed. What have you got? Completely divided society. That's why you have these ups and downs in part. And then what's going to happen is the Pharisees are going to get the upper hand by cheating. And Kelly, you're right. These folks who have been thinking of Jesus as the Messiah in one sense, the physical sense, he's going to be the king, what do they then see? They see him
portrayed as a fraud.
They see him portrayed as a fraud. They see him going down the drains, and they feel had. Right? And so all of these times, recognize that all of these times you've seen Jesus say, I'm telling you this so you'll remember it. I'm telling you so you will know that the Son of Man must suffer. None of this was unexpected. It was all forecast and it was all told. And that explains. Apparently my machine thinks I said Siri and it is now transcribing every word I say. and I have to stop that. Okay.
Behind the scenes of all this, though, through the mob, through how the Pharisees are acting, it just occurred to me, or just thinking about how all this goes through, this is Satan's really pinning his own undoing through all of this, as he's, you know, weaving in and out through the Pharisees, through the people, stirring people up, doing this, that, and the other. Ultimately, to the end where Christ gives up his life, like Noy talked about, something, he gave it up. And I think at that point he realized, he was throwing everything he had. Okay, I'm going to crucify. I'm going to have Christ destroyed. And then, you know, my reign is going to, you know, begin. Right, the opposite.
You're spot. We've mentioned that you haven't been in all year. It's been a very long year. You haven't been in all year. We started this class with God is a God of victory and reversals, right? He'll take an expectation and he'll flip it on its head, and that's how he has victory. And we know that from whoever is first shall be last, sort of. But the cross is it, right? And think about everything that Satan does to orchestrate the certainty of the death of Christ on the cross. I mean, a tomb sealed with the Roman seal, with soldiers outside. I am convinced from Scripture Satan didn't know what was going to happen, right? Because the Scripture says, if men had known, it doesn't say Satan, but it says if men had known what was going on, they would not have crucified him. And it was Satan who was driving those men. So Satan is giggling, right? Ooh, I am actually getting one ahead of God. And he orchestrates it so that when the crucifixion occurs, it's public and everybody sees it. And then when he's buried, there is no way for anybody to steal the body or any of those sorts of things. And yet, guess what? The tomb's empty. For all of his efforts to prove that he overcame and killed the Son of God, what did he end up proving? He ended up proving by those very same pieces of evidence that actually Christ arose. Right? And it's just beautiful. It is God turning Satan's own hand against him. And if that's not a sign of the greatness of our God, That's just incredible. And the end of it is page 1443. Jesus says, this is one of those places where he says, the voice was for your benefit, not mine, right? Now is the time for judgment on this world. Now the prince of the world will be driven out. That's exactly what's happening. The victory is coming at Satan's insistence on trying to win. All right. Time just flies, doesn't it? How much do we want to do? I want to talk about that. I can't talk about that. Let's do a little quick ones. 1448. One of my soap boxes. Yeah, no, I got off. The widow's mites. Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came in and put two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. What's going on here? All right, who's watching?
All the Pharisees.
Well, they may be watching. Who's talking about watching?
Jesus.
Jesus. Right? Is Jesus watching the little things? That's a good answer. You bet he is. And what specifically is he watching?
People putting in.
He's watching people go by and put their money in when maybe they think other people aren't paying a whole lot of attention. I mean, some of these people who are dropping in crowns and the like, they think other people are paying attention. She think anybody's paying attention? Mm-hmm. Jesus is watching what you do. Don't miss that point in it. And What's the story of this? Joseph, she put in all that she had. What does that mean she's doing?
She's faithful to God and giving all she has to
him. Right, where's her next meal going to come from?
God will
provide. All right, that's got to be in her mind, right? So it's a message of Jesus is watching, and it's a message of he looks with favor on those who do what?
Trust.
Who trust and have reliance on him. It's a message of the heart. It's a message of reliance. And so then, take your heavy-handed side to it. It's not heavy-handed. Why does the God want the contributions?
For the reason he gave you a meal.
For our benefit.
It's for our benefit. This voice was not for my benefit. It was for you. You're giving the mites not for my benefit, but for you. You're learning reliance. You're learning trust. And so if we get too worried about what we're putting in the collection plate, well, maybe you need to be for a little bit and then realize God's in control. Don't shy away from relying on him. That's all I have to say on it. All right. Now, yeah, we'll end our time on this. 1449. So as Jesus was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings. Do you see all these great buildings?" replied Jesus. "Not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." What is Jesus saying?
He doesn't like the
architecture. I don't think that he is displeased with the architecture. But we can go there. If it's not a distaste for the Baroque architecture, what's his message? What was the sentiment in the remark made?
It's not physical.
Judaism is about to go for...
Okay, the remark made to him was, look at how magnificent this is. This is stunning. This is great. This is what God and the kingdom is all about, right? And Jesus says, oh, all that rubbish, that's going to be torn down. That doesn't mean anything. Isn't that what he's saying? Okay, and so his disciples then say, well, wait a minute, that's some news. You're talking about big stuff. And they recognize that he's talking about the end of the age, right? So they say, when will this happen? What will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Let me ask you a question. Are they asking this because they perceive that the New Testament is going to be written and have this in there, and therefore they are asking for what's going to happen in 2,000 years, or 3,000 years, or 4,000 years? What are they thinking?
They know that the kingdom is coming. That's what they're asking.
They are still, right? They are still, salvation has come to your house today. The kingdom is coming all at once. Right? And he's saying, if this is what you're thinking about, this isn't it. And so he said, so he makes this remark, and they say, well, so tell us the sign. What are they saying? What does Gavin Jones look for? They're saying, what do I look for? They're expecting to be around when they see the signs. So what's Jesus' answer? This is where we get some. I mean, did y'all read through this and know exactly what everything's talking about? Okay. Jesus tells of signs. Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name, claiming I am the Messiah. Many will deceive and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come." What's he saying? What was the message to Daniel in those prophecies?
There, not going to be what
there's, and what was the message in the parable of the 10 minas? Right?
Work till it comes.
There's stuff to happen yet. There's work to be done. There's a long time. But listen, we're going to end on this section, but this section does not end at the next heading. Okay? He is engaged in a dialogue with them here, which is, the end is coming. It's not just right now, but you need to be ready for whenever it comes. And so we will get through, because I'm bad at managing time, I'll tell you, I'll go ahead and forecast. When you get over here onto page 1452, talking about the talents, when you get to page 1453, concerning... giving drinks to those who are in prison, etc., etc., that's all part of this same dialogue. Those are not disconnected. Those are not just pithy little statements that he's saying. It is all part of, you want to know what to look for? Even the sun doesn't know the particular time and hour. Here's what you need to know. Things are going to happen. Wars, rumors of wars, earthquakes. Life is going to go on, in some pretty bad life. But you be ready every step of the way, because you don't know when it is. So let's start looking at that that a bit. Yeah?
What do you take when he says these things must happen and they're birth pain?
All right, let's break it down. Before I get to that, watch me. Make sure I don't get close to that with 5 minutes, less than 5 minutes remaining. Hush, hush. All right, so in the things that are going to happen to them, they've asked about them, in the things that are going to happen to them, what's going to be happening to them? There's going to be some tough stuff, right? You're going to be on, you must be on your guard. You'll be handed over to the local councils and flogged and put out of the synagogues. On account of me, you will stand before governors and kings as witnesses to them, and the gospel must first be preached to all nations. What do we know about some timing? Some of that stuff's got to happen. What's the stuff that's got to happen? It's going to be hard on you, right? All right, to whom is he speaking? He's speaking to these particular, it's actually these named ones, right? And it is specifically to them and is to those who will be standing before governors and kings as witnesses to them, right? And so the promise to them is, even though it's going to be hard for you, what? Don't worry, because what? Because the Holy Spirit's going to come and help you and tell you what to say at the time. To whom is that? It's to those who are witnesses, to governors and kings, so that the word may be preached to all the world. It's to these men, right? Is that to Mr. Dembowski? Because you don't want to be flogged. I get it. Okay. So let's be careful. Let's be careful when we're talking about what the Spirit's going to do for people, that we pay attention to the audience to which the promise is made, right? Okay. So we go on from there. And we're still in this discussion. Over at the bottom of the first page here, it had been, things are going to be bad for you, right? And now, as history progresses, this next paragraph, brother will betray brother to death, father his child. This paragraph is about whom?
Other people.
Everybody, right? It's not just you that's going to have some difficulty. And then at the end of that paragraph, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached to the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So see, again, his message is stuff's gonna happen. Now, we've got this next paragraph. So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, what do you know? Yeah, it's time to go. Why? Is that the end of the world? That's the end of Jerusalem, and we've got it specifically here, right? When you see Jerusalem being surrounded by armies, you would know that it's Jerusalem's desolation is near, right? And this is among your bank of horrible things that are going to have to happen, right? There's not going to be tribulation like those days. There never has been. There won't be tribulation like it in future days. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. So are people going to survive that?
Yes.
Is that the end of the world?
No.
No. Okay. Yeah. Now, let's look at what he says immediately after this. But if you're a Jew and you've expected the kingdom to be at that temple, and you've expected Jerusalem to be the seat, and you see all of that happening in Jerusalem, what are you going to be thinking? Well, this is pretty much the end of the world, because he said his kingdom would endure forever, right? And so he says right after that, look at this. He says, if at that time, where am I? If anyone says to you, look, here is the Messiah, or there he is, what?
Don't believe it.
There are going to be lots of false messiahs, lots of signs. If they come to you and they say, he's out in the wilderness. Well, there he is in the inner room. Don't believe that. Why not? Why does the scripture say why not?
It's going to be like lightning.
What does that mean? Yes. Right? So here's the setting that he said. Look, Jerusalem's going to fall in AD 70. I'm not telling you at the time, but that's what's going to happen. And you're going to think it's the end of the world, and people are going to be saying, hey, the Messiah's over there. This is part of the plan. The Messiah's over there. And what's his message to them? No, baby, you'll know when the Messiah is coming. All right. I'm sorry, that was colloquial. You aren't going to be able to miss it when he comes. Isn't that right? That's what he's saying. So he's brought up this. They've said, what are the signs of the coming? And he said, look, terrible things are going to happen. Even the city is going to fall. And people are going to say, I'm there. And don't you think that it's the end of the world until the Messiah comes. And you're going to know when that happens. All right. So he's going to be talking about two events here. He's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem that's going to engender all these people saying, hey, here's the Messiah, just follow over here, get away. And the second event is actually the end of the world as we know it, right? Not to sing. And we know that that first event is not the end of times, because he says those days are shortened, else no one would survive. Is anybody going to survive the end of the world?
Nope.
Ain't nobody going to survive the end of the world. So that first event is not the end of the world. The second event is the end of the world, all right? And that's what's going to be what comes like lightning. You're not going to be able to escape it. That's the unmistakable. And so, Joel, you ask, You ask, what does he mean here when he says, when you see all these things, you will know it is near, right at the door. I don't even know where I'm pointing up there. So, truly, I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. Which event is he talking about when he says all these things are going to happen in this generation?
It can't be the end of the world.
It can't be the end of the world because we know in hindsight, right, that the world didn't end in that generation. No, you didn't miss it, Brother Dombowski. And can he be telling them about the timing of the end of the world at all here? Why do you know he's not telling them about the timing of the end of the world at all?
Because
about that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels nor the Son, right? So when we have this statement about the generation is not going to pass away, you have to understand what he's doing there. He's answering a question from them. When are these things going to happen? Well, you've asked me about two different things, guys. I told you that this is going to be thrown over. These stones are going to be thrown over. That's event number one. These are the things that must... these things, that's what he had spoken about. And then they had asked a second question, the end of the ages. That's the second event. And so he treats them in order. But he's expressly saying, I'm not going to tell you when the end of the age is. And that's when you get into all of the rest of these pages are... Watch, the thief is going to come in the middle of the night. Be ready. Don't be like the unwise bridesmaids, right? Be ready. And then the last of those parables are all about stewardship. It's the talents. Be a steward of the talents, the resources, the things that he's given you. The very last one is be a steward of opportunity to help. Be a steward of God's things, God's people, right? That was the second bell, right? Because it's loud out there. So, well, I am sweating down my back because I got excited. Let's pick up on November 14. We're close to where we're supposed to be. Let's pick up on November 14, page 1458 on Sunday.